Well, welcome back to another episode here on Charting the Course. It is so good to be with you guys. I hope you're having a wonderful start to the spring. You may be listening to this on your spring break, traveling to and from wherever it may be. So if you find yourself traveling in the car, we hope you're traveling safe. But we hope that this conversation will highlight some important topics that we feel like are impactful no matter what age, wealth status, net worth level you find yourself. So I am joined today here in studio by Mr. Kyle Ray. Kyle, thank you for joining me down here in the studio.
Sure.
Yeah. I talked you into coming down here and talking about a handful of things. But one of the things we're going to start with is I'm calling it a money mission statement. You can label it a value statement, a mission statement, a motto. I just wrote an article that the Journal Record was kind enough to publish. They do a great job of letting all of our team write articles at times and getting that out there in print, which is really fun. But I just wrote about this, and so it's kind of been on the front of my mind. But the creation of a money mission statement, and it's really at the end of the day, it's just identifying, putting words to paper of things that you hope your money accomplishes. And I know for me, and kind of want to get your input here, but a level of wealth doesn't matter when you're doing this. I think you can have a mission statement for your wealth or your funds or your money, no matter if you've got a dollar in the bank or $10 million in the bank.
Exactly. Yeah.
So have you had any conversations around this? I'll give you an example of what mine is, but do you have a client or an example of somebody that you feel like has done this and has done this well?
Yeah. And I think when you ask a client or a prospective client this question of forming the money mission statement, it's easy or it's hard for them to not just say, well, my goal is to make as much money as possible
right
over a long period of time. But one good example, I've had many clients make mission statements that are similar to the one that I'm about to say. So this is kind of a generalized mm-hmm. statement. But one example of one that I've heard is our money, meaning our family's money, will be used to achieve our goals, create a legacy, and make a positive impact in the world or in our world where we live. And so I thought that was really great. It allows us as the advisor to unpack a lot there. So first of all, if we kind of unpack that sentence, you've got goals. So mm-hmm. that allows us to start talking about what your specific goals are.
Naming it.
Sort of like, that's like your high level. Then we can go a level deeper with naming the goals. Creating a legacy, obviously that's something that they put in there to leave a legacy for their family or for their existing mm-hmm. children, leave something for them. And then the positive impact could be very different. That could be just leaving money and impacting charities around the state or the country, or maybe it's something more specific, such as the school that they grew up going to or that their kids went to. But there's a lot in that sentence, and it allows us to kind of take it down a notch and figure out what we need to do to help them meet those goals.
Sure. Maybe it's because I'm a simple person and not as sophisticated as some of you individuals here at Full Sail. But my mission statement or my value statement that I assign kind of to, it can be wealth, but it can also just be the day-to-day. But it's an old John Wesley quote, and it's earn all you can, give all you can, and save all you can. And I particularly like that order because I like of everything that I earn. It's something that's important to my family that then we give back and we mm-hmm. tithe on that. And then after that, we save. And so then from there, we identify what we want to spend our money on. And that can be short-term annual
right.
viewpoint, or that can be a very long-term viewpoint. But the two words I love that you said were on the sentence you gave me was legacy and impact. And I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a couple or an individual that doesn't want to take that into consideration.
Right.
Like, what are you going to impact?
Right.
What's your legacy going to be?
Yeah, I think I won't speak for you, Tyler, and you can agree or disagree.
Oh, but, you can speak for me.
But I think it's often the most fun to work with the people that say, I want to make as much money as possible because I want to give as much money as yeah. I possibly can away. Mm-hmm. And those are really fun people to work with.
Generous investors, generous givers, generous savers they have a different mindset for sure.
Yeah.
And you can identify them. They have a piece about them that
right.
That some others don't. Before we move on from here, you know, what do you think we do well as advisors, or you've watched maybe one of our team members do well when they're encouraging clients to have this conversation? Mm-hmm. We're trying to help align the wealth with a money mission statement or aligning values. Like, how do you encourage clients to do that? What outside of maybe you move past the sentence you gave me, but what, how do you kind of help move them into that planning?
I think the first step, and I'll step back one more second before I go to that, is, and say that a lot of clients have not thought about this. They've just always thought, like I said, I want to make as much money as possible. So getting clients into this new mindset of, well, we understand that, and we're here to try to help do that. Obviously, that is our first and foremost job. But past that, what's all this money doing? I mean, is it like, what are we working towards? And so what I've really observed our team, once we've gone from the phase of helping the client build a mission statement, is then go into that next phase of typically financial planning. If we're really like get specific about what these goals are, and what these different things are, whether it be annual gifting, leaving a legacy upon death, that we can really put pen to paper as to what, let's get the goals on paper, and then let's figure out what we need to do to meet those goals. So usually it's a natural progression from mission statement, potentially financial planning, which then leads us to where we need to be and how we need to invest at the lowest level.
So it's a perfect segue into kind of the next part of our conversation today, and that's on goal setting, and that's on identifying or helping the client, helping the investor identify those goals. So what does it look like? Do you like to start very detailed down ground floor? Or do you like to go up a level with them, maybe a couple levels with them, and identify, like, where do you typically start when you're laying out these goals?
I guess it depends how much the client has already thought about their goals to start. I typically will start top level, as we do with most things here at Full Sail. Some of those goals could include those specific goals could include retirement. That's a very popular one. Obviously, people want to know that, A, if they're not to retirement yet, that they're going to have enough money to retire and live through retirement. Or B, if they're already retired, if they're indeed going to make it, or if we need to change some things.
Or how early can I retire?
But I really like when we get specific, especially when you move into a phase, more particularly with grandparents and they've got grandkids. Some goals may include, you know, taking care of their school, gifting to the kids for school, taking care of school. That seems to be really impactful on the grandparents to be able to handle that for their kids, take that burden off of their kids. Other things you've got is like annual travel. Some clients who do or don't have kids, it's their main goal to go see the world.
Yeah.
And so the biggest line item on their budget might be travel. And how, and some clients, in fact, I spent some time with one last week that said, what do I need to give up in my normal budget? Where can we find extra money so I can travel more? So I can increase my travel budget by 100%. I can double that.
Wow.
How do we do that? Yeah. And so those, you get into some really great conversations, but you also, when you're goal setting, you're really figuring out what is important to this person, whether it be spending as little money as possible to leave as big a legacy as possible one day, or if it's to spend all they can today to enjoy seeing the world or seeing their grandkids or their kids experience money today.
Oh, and I think it goes back to, you know, there's a reason we kind of laid out today's conversation in the order we did, because I think before you start identifying goals, I'd back all the way up and figure out what are the things we care about, what are our values, and then go from there, because I think they fall into it. So we had Daniel Crosby on the podcast, and one thing that I loved, and he talked about this in his book, was around this goal conversation. And so his example, and I use this, I've actually used this for a long time and will continue to use it, but it's you label these accounts with the name or the goal that you're trying to save for. So instead of it being, you know, savings account one, you name it, let's say you're saving for your daughter for maybe a future wedding or spend. And you say, okay, well, this is going to be, and we'll say this is Alex savings account or Alex wedding fund. Just by labeling it, his research showed that there was an exponentially higher percentage chance that you were going to meet that goal.
Right.
And I think it goes to your point of talking about it, identifying what it is, but then it's also the discipline of doing it. From my seat, my recommendation is label it, you know, title it if you can, but put a name around that goal and put a name around that account you're maybe using to fund it. The other thing is, and I've watched this happen a lot, you see it with college savings funds or some of our clients that do auto monthly deposits, but setting these savings plans up on autopilot to where you don't have to think about it is a very easy way to get success, because saying, well, we'll do this at the end of every year gets much harder.
Right.
To put away, you know, $1,000 at the end of the year than if you're willing to say, I'm going to do $50 a month or $75 a month, and it's going to come out. And so those would be kind of my two recommendations around the goal conversation of what increases your percentage chances, kind of get on a disciplined auto deposit strategy and then identify, like actually label the account.
Yeah. Well, not to go off on a tangent here, but the same sort of thing happens to people who save in a 401k for 40 years. They were almost forced in a way. You can't elect to contribute or not contribute, but right. You saved without thought right off the top of your paycheck. Didn't even see it hit your bank account for 30 to 40 years. And you look up, it's a number that a lot of people can't quite believe is right. Actually there because right. It was compounded returns over many years. And if you trace back what you actually, or what the person actually put into the 401k plan, it's often a fraction of what the value actually is. So that's just more to talk about discipline and compounding. And that could be a whole other podcast, obviously.
You're speaking my language. I mean, I'm very partial to 401k plans and the part they play in just especially the workplace and giving right. Access to people that wouldn't normally have access to retirement savings. But I think you said it, it's the discipline and then letting compounding do its thing. And we don't right. Have time to do a whole dissertation on compounding, but high level, the compounding effect, meaning just, you know, your funds and everything getting reinvested and earnings, what your earnings getting reinvested and creating more earning potential, that you don't really see that till the latter part of that savings journey.
Right.
So it feels like in the first 10, 15 years, you're just like, well, I'm making a little bit, but it really balloons at the end of that. And so just kind of an encouragement to stick with it. What are some of the most rewarding goals you've seen a client check off their list, or a unique goal maybe that you've seen a client identify? I know for me, one of the most rewarding ones is just anytime a client can pay off debt, right. You know, climb out of and it doesn't mean they're, you know, near bankruptcy. It just means they've identified something. They want to pay off that car. They don't pay off their house is, of course, a huge one. We weren't having as many of those conversations when rates are so low because right. There's some math there. But nowadays, it's becoming more of a conversation. But what about you?
The two that I see that seem to give people the most joy are, A, something we've already talked about is contributing either to a 529 plan for their grandchildren or just outright paying for their school, whether it's private education, K-12 or college. Giving the gift of education really seems to make parents or grandparents, mm-hmm. I'm not just talking about grandparents here, very happy, or someone that's even unrelated to them. The other one that I've really enjoyed helping people, assist people in meeting is giving money to their charities. It usually falls under the umbrella of their church and mm-hmm. where they go to church, but be able to give larger gifts along yep. the way to certain charities that they really are passionate about. And yeah, so I've seen those two give people more joy than anything.
I know it's funny. They spend all their life worrying and fretting over their accounts and growing it. And then they, to your point, they look up one day and they realize they have all this money, or they have, and all this money is relative, right? It could be,
right. It's
their number, whatever that is. It doesn't have to have a bunch of zeros behind it. But a lot of times they're more fulfilled when they're giving that away than they are sitting
exactly.
there looking at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
It really is.
We have more than one client that would say this, but I'm thinking of one specifically, and he says, none of this money is mine. It's my church's or God's money.
Right.
And I'm just trying to foster it to the end.
Steward it. Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. The last thing I wanted to end on, and this is something that Max brought up actually in one of our advisor meetings that we were having a discussion about. And that is around looking at wealth management, looking at our world, looking at financial advising from a generational perspective. And one thing that I think our firm does a good job of and continues to try to improve at is how do we continue to engage multiple generations within a household? And for us, a household can mean, you know, it can mean one family last name or two family last names, but we've got 8 or 9 family units within that household, all tied together, all woven together. And that is some of the most, I think, impactful work we can do is when we're working with those multiple generation families. Why do you think it is so vital to, I mean, given everything we've already talked about the first 15 minutes of this conversation, but we've talked about values and mission statements and goal setting, but why is incorporating that next generation so important when we're talking about all this?
There's a lot of studies around this topic particularly, but I just think that if you're looking at second, third generation inheritors, I guess we'll call them, it's so important for them to understand how the initial wealth was created.
Yeah.
Whether it was originally passed down to them or whether it was how it was worked for, the blood, sweat, and tears that it took to get there. There's a stat, and there's some different studies on this, like I said, but I'm reading one right now by a group called Williams Group. They did a study over 20 years of 3,200 families.
Okay.
And they found that by the second generation, about 70% of the wealth was gone. And by the third generation, 90% of it was gone.
And that number...
Or 90% of the families that inherited third generation, the money was
gone. Money's gone. Yeah. And that number continues to get worse.
Right.
I mean, every generation we add.
Right. And you can read the studies, and there's a whole list of reasons, such as there wasn't a lifestyle that the money could support. There wasn't, you know, all these different things. But I go back to the psychology of it all, and that they just didn't have quite the understanding or the backstory of how much hard work it took to earn that money.
Yeah.
And so there's a real disconnect of what they perceived, that how the money would last and how it really lasted.
It's huge. I'll say this, the families, clients or not, but the families that I've seen that have had success in one involving multiple generations and then success in passing wealth down, it's happened because they have been open and honest at an appropriate level. Mm-hmm. Like, don't tell your 3-year-old the right. success story. You right. have a very different conversation, but you can't wait till they're 30 and be like, oh, hey, by the way, this is the reason for all this. And then expect that individual just all of a sudden be like, oh yeah, okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Like it's gotta be a journey. It's gotta be a story, and you have to mature the story as they get older, right. I think.
Right.
And so I've watched the families that have done it successfully have done that well.
Yeah. And something, you know, you and I discussed this off camera, but at 3, 4, 5 years old, you're not going to open the book and say, here's all our wealth. I mean, they couldn't understand it. They couldn't comprehend what it even means anyways. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think starting kids out early, whether giving them allowance, and I think the big point here is just working and getting a grasp on how to earn a dollar
yep.
and the value of that dollar.
I love
that. Whether
that's
unloading the dishes and getting a little allowance or doing the laundry, whatever it is, instilling those values early. And then as they age and can understand more of what the money and generational wealth yep. looks like and what it means, then open the books, show them more of what's going on. That seems to be really impactful as well. And then for really high net worth families, you can talk about some really creative estate planning you can do through irrevocable trust. David and I were discussing this not too long ago. You could create provisions in a irrevocable trust where the beneficiary, maybe a grandkid, can get distributions from the trust, but they can only get it equal to what they make on their own. So they have the incentive to make more money themselves because they know they can get a bigger distribution rather than just kicking out distributions at normal years and right. the kid never works. There's right. That's where you see a lot of the disconnect as well.
Oh,
so you can
sure.
do some at the really high net worth kind of side of things. You can do some really creative estate planning. Not everyone's going to have those sort of dollars we're talking about, but there's a lot of ways to instill the values for how you earn the money. I think that's the most important thing.
I couldn't agree more. You know, I think we'll have some listeners or some clients who are sitting there going, man, I've waited too long. Now, what do I do? And I think I just used the example of, you know, not being 3, but not being 30. Like if you're in your 70s, 80s, and your grown kids are in their 40s and 50s, like you can still have that conversation.
Right.
Like it's not too late to start. Right. It might rock the boat a little bit based on what, if you're changing some things they're used to, but right. I can't envision a scenario when it's a bad idea to,
I can't either,
tell the story of where this wealth came from.
Right.
And again, the wealth, the figure's relative.
Right.
It does not matter. Maybe you aren't leaving as much to your kids or grandkids as you would hope to, but you want them to be able to leave more to their kids and grandkids.
Right.
It's still important to tell that story.
Right. And I think talking about the generational kind of wealth planning and conversations between the generations, it all ties back to the money mission statement. If we go back up to the start of the conversation here, if you let your kids in or your grandkids in on why you are working so hard and why you have earned this money, it's not just because we wanted to earn a lot of money, but here's our family mission statement for how we want this money to allow us to achieve our goals. I think that allows everyone to get on the same page of like, here's what our money allows us to live the life we want to live, but it also allows us to do all these other things. And if we don't keep it going, that's yep. all going to go away. And yep. so not to put fear in them, but to just let them into your psychology of why you do what you do with your money and why you want to do it.
Yep. The most successful people I know, whether they were in business or investing, whatever it may have been, they were the most hardest working people that I either heard about or watched with my own eyes.
Right.
And then they were determined. And I think that is the huge thing. The sports nerd in me, I was listening to an interview with a coach, and this coach was talking about his dad and how he instilled work ethic in him as a kid. And he remembers as a kid always complaining some at times that, wow, dad, why do you have to go to work? Or mom, why do you have to go to work? And it was either his mom or his dad, but I think it was his dad. And his dad said, said, I don't have to go to work. I get to go to work. It's a privilege to be able to work. Some people can't go to work. I get to go to work. And it was just a unique perspective of my kids have said that to me. It's like, if you go to work today, I'm like, right. Just because you're off school for the 18th time today doesn't, or this year doesn't mean I work closes. Like right. I get to go to work.
Right.
And so it's a mentality.
Yeah. That reminds me of a story of our own Scott Cravens. And he did a podcast on this a couple of years ago with some people on this. This was maybe 2021, but it paints the story well, I think, in that he was picking up trash on his grandpa's properties at, you know, between the ages of 0 and 5 or 0 and 10. It instilled the values of why you want your properties to look good and why they need to look good and why you do all these things. And fast forward, 15 years past that, his, grandpa passed and he's managing it all. Not to say that he couldn't do that effectively if he didn't have that foresight, but having the knowledge of why it was important to make your property look presentable and why it was important to foster these things along the way. And I think has to be incredibly important.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, it meant more than probably we could even describe. And there's examples of that across many generations of this generational wealth that we're talking about. There's many great stories like that one.
Let's wrap up with this. We've talked, I hope people, our listeners, clients, friends have gotten a few things today. And if you didn't get anything out, my hope is that you would just even give thought to assigning, having that motto, putting that mission statement, putting that value statement behind your money and your wealth. Why do you spend what you do where you do? Like, what's the why behind it, right? Think about your goals and then think about engaging that next generation. As we wrap up, just kind of present day stuff, Kyle, we're recording this mid-March here, the market, today's March 12th, actually. So this podcast will come out here not too long after that. We've had some turmoil in the markets, which is not unexpected by any means. But given our conversation today, Kyle, I'd be curious to know, have you used some of these same topics when you're talking with clients today about what the market's doing? And I think we've had conversations internally about let's focus on these things we just talked about for 25 minutes instead of the day-to-day in the market. But what do those conversations look like today?
A lot of the conversations around the market today are interesting in that I've heard it from multiple people, in the last couple of weeks that stocks are bad right now. Right. And it's like, well, we've got to zoom out here a little bit.
Remember when stocks were really, really good?
Yeah, remember when they were really good the last 2 years, they've been really good. And I think that's just the approach that we try to instill in our clients is that we know it's inevitable that you're going to go through ups and downs. Stocks are going to look really good and really bad at different times. The big thing that we've been talking to clients about, and we've preached it for many years, is the importance of diversification. And so I don't want to go on a market dissertation right now, but U.S. markets are down year to date. International is up a lot. There's a huge spread between international. This is, what day is it today?
This is
March 12th. So if this is different in a couple of weeks,
we can
take this out. But international markets are really outperforming U.S. markets year to date, and fixed income has really is holding its end.
Bonds are doing its job again.
Yeah, they're doing their job. I think if you think back how we've discussed with clients the last few years is the importance of diversification. But clients, let's go back to 2022. That's not all that long ago. That was a year where everything was down.
Everything.
You were
nowhere to hide.
You couldn't hide from it. You go fast forward from there, 23 and 24, the S&P 500, U.S. large cap stock market is just, it was on an incredible, and it went on an incredible run.
It was hard
and
to so lose
it's hard
money.
It's hard to look anywhere else outside of the S&P 500 and say, well, why do I want to be diversified? Yeah. It doesn't seem like it's providing much, but I think it's years like this and times like this. Obviously, we don't know where we're going to end at the end of this year, but it's times like the first quarter of this year that diversification really is showing why it is so important. And to set that allocation and not forget it, but keep just working towards rebalancing and getting it back in place. That's a lot of conversations I've had of, hey, this diversification thing is actually, it is working and it will work for you. It won't always look like it, but it is.
I couldn't agree more. And I think what I would end with is during these days, during these years, we'll have another year, hopefully not like 22 for a long time. Cause that was that was an anomaly. You had to go back to like the early 80s, but there'll be years when the stock market's down. That just happens.
Yeah. It happens pretty a lot.
We can't say the word guarantee for a reason in our business.
It happens more often than people want to admit it.
So I always fall back on, okay, well, did your values change? Did the mission of your money change? Did your goals change? And if not, and as long, and we didn't even really get to this, and this is another day, another conversation, but we should set allocations up appropriately based on those values and those goals and that mission.
Yeah.
And if we're doing our job, if your advisor's doing their job and they're doing that, then you should focus on going out and figuring out how to further your mission and increase your legacy, right, and knowing that you're diversified and you're allocated, right, correctly.
Yeah. What I would say is, if you're not going to meet your goals because of what happens in 1 3-month stretch, then either your goals are unrealistic, which sometimes
we've had that conversation.
That does happen, or your allocation is completely wrong.
Yeah.
So I can, one of the two, it really can't be anything else.
1,000%. Mr. Kyle, I appreciate it. Anything you'd like to add?
No, I think that's great.
Kyle, thanks for joining us. I hope you all have a wonderful rest of March. We will be back in April with our quarter one squared away, which is crazy. I feel like we just did the end of year, but we'll have our first quarter of 2025. We'll have our squared away with the investment team. And I'm sure, as always, there will be plenty to discuss. So until then, go out, create a money mission statement, identify your goals, reset your values, and talk to your next generation. Even if they're 18 months old, it's okay. Never a bad time. All right. Thanks again, y'all. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's conversation, don't forget to review and subscribe through your preferred podcast platform. Have a great week. All opinions expressed by the host and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Full Sail Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of Full Sail may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.